Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. Now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Welcome to the program. My special guests tonight are members of the famed poetry collective, The Right Blend. In alphabetical order, the members of the group are Clifford Bernier, Hiram LaRue, Billy O'Kara, Diane Wilburn Parks, Liz Reitzik, and Dynasta Miss Kyanne Thomas. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, welcome. You know, the title of their first book is The Right Blend, and it is available on Amazon and Walmart.com. It is a must-read. It is not only compelling and powerful, but timely, given ongoing debates about race, color, gender, class, and opportunity in America. I could go on and on about the importance of this book, but I'd rather turn the program over to the members of the group to share their own words, poems, and thoughts. So I turn the program over to Clifford Bernier and Diane Wilburn Parks.
Thank you, Dr. Ingram. All the winds. Ode to the jazz harmonica. All the winds that ever were blow through this harp. The Scirocco, scorching Africa. The Mistral, storming the Rhone. Trade winds charting the Indies. Westerlies, pumping heat from the horse latitudes to the coast of Capricorn and Cancer, to Pampero on the Pampas, doldrums in the tropics. All the winds that ever were blow through this harp. From the first star, music of the spheres, Aeolus conjuring cyclones, Zephyr foretelling spring, Phaleon summoning the sunlight, twisting tornadoes, rubatos, monsoons and hurricanes, shear, planetary pressure, spiraling squalls, willy-nilly and the dust devils. All the winds that ever were blow through this harp. The winds of change, the four sheets, pissing, spitting, downburst, up-tempo, the polar easterlies, sloping to Derecho, the bees, kissing the Alps, the Buran in Siberia, Rudra surfing the loons, the jazz that composes life, movement in deep time. All the winds that ever were blow through this harp.
Thank you, Dr. Ingram. My poem is Night. She stood as dark as ever, waiting for me to follow. I chose her canopy for covering and faded into her like clouds. She sleepwalks in my skin, questioning the sound of my moods. We've been here before. Our souls crossed as she tucked the moon in my hair. We've lain on the subtle hills of her slanted cliffs and mountaintops trimmed in heavy coals, sprinkling dust over pitched blue moons and pillows while craving the intractable lips of her rivers. My eyes quickly fold, then flow through her mouth, kissing the bank of her salty lips as she stands stronger and darker than ever, glistening like diamonds, peeking out of shadows. She eagerly plucks the soul of wild children, leaving their flesh to become lifeless sentences of old intellect. She wears truth like sandals. I'm left bald with the heartbeat of a wind. I can't seem to convince any longer. She drags me into the strings of songs that a sandman carries. I go into her eagerly, night. Thank you.
The Right Blend. What a beautiful title of a book. And when I had an opportunity to read about the word blend itself and the definition of it, to mix together or combine together so as to make a product of desired quality, to put or combine abstract things together to form a harmonious combination, tell me more about the title of the book and the group.
Well, I was from Diane, I will tell you, for me, it certainly has a distinction of voices, but they blend so well together. It means that even though we are unique, we are different, that these beautiful differences we have come to respect, and it is like an array or a bouquet of flowers. We complement each other. And so I think that's what's missing if we look at the world today, is that the respect of our differences and the fact that we are culturally different, and our artistic talents are all different. The ranges are very broad and different, but they are to be respected and to be celebrated.
Very nice.
And that's why we blend.
That's why you blend. What was the most difficult part of the artistic process? Anyone?
This is Cayenne. I think that's the irony with us, and anyone can, you know, chime in, but I think that is the irony, is that while we are very different, whether in ethnicity, ages, and just backgrounds, when we write, uncannily, there is a unity. Even from our different perspectives, you will find a place that we all land together or similarly that makes the process of writing together very easy and not challenging at all. It's so unrehearsed. It's so organic. Very difficult to really explain, but I don't find much difficulty in writing together.
Others, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, Cliff here. I think we feed off each other. We feed off of our experiences and our approaches to life, and draw inspiration from each other. And I think it deepens our poetry.
Now, is that inspiration that you draw from each other also the easiest part of the process?
Probably. It's inspiring.
That's why they pay me the big bucks to ask big questions. Please answer that one more time. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, no, I think being around each other is just inspiring. Maybe the hardest part is getting our schedules to align. But being together is a joy.
All right, very nice, very nice. I'd like now to introduce Billy O'Kara and Hiram LaRue.
Okay, well, this is Billy, and I'm going to read a poem from the chapter in the book called Blending Voices, and it's called The Poet in Me. There was the poet in me, word of falling freeform from fountains full of wonder, torn asunder, not repenting or relenting. What was simile or metaphor became core phrases fighting fitful for freedoms on aberrant page. There was the poet in me, time when shadows shamed by fearless light of pen spend no tall tales, worshipped no false gods, but scampered fast away. I'd have my say of ruthless rage, reckless and full of truth. There was the poet in me, witness, prophet, preacher, bard, proclaiming and naming nuanced nightmare, visions vying for open air, full of grace and love, and what was lyrical in the night came as song, and what was haiku wandered about her, she and God in spoken word, wilderness walking. there was the poet in me, blind as Bartimaeus, lame as the one lying by the pool of Bethesda, awaiting troubled waters, waiting to be lifted higher, higher, waking word, and my sin of silence purged. There was the poet in me, one arisen from the tomb, released from that dark star death, unearthing universal utterance, badgering my demons back down into the darkness. Lord, give me coals of fire upon my tongue, the gift of David unafraid, that when laid upon that open page, there shouts the psalmist, Rio, and the sage. There was the poet in me.
Beautiful.
That was beautiful, Billy. This is Hiram LaRue. And Dr. Ingram, before I read my poem, I just want to hold up the vision that Diane Wilbon Parks had in forming this group. I don't want to speak for her, but I think she saw that there was both an opportunity, a wonderful opportunity, and a real need these days and times to form a group of diverse poetic voices and poets. And she has very successfully done that. As Billy mentioned, her poem that she just read was from one of the sections of the book called Blending Voices. The collection is, in fact, divided into several sections, like Blending Colors, Blending Praise, Blending Uniqueness, Blending Together. My poem is from the Blending Voices section, and it's titled Evening. Gnats know how lovely you are. So do yucca leaf spears here on the island that makes you, takes you towards whispering clouds, takes you into rose risks of sunshine and deep ferns peeled back to reveal those hiddens of you. No one else but you goldens the gnats, or walks up the sand, shouldering the air like a country. Thank you, Dr. Ingram.
Right.
Thank you, sir.
Very nice. Very nice. One of the questions that I ask all my guests, and I've had over 150 now, is what is poetry? Would anyone like to take a stab at that? What is poetry to them, to you individually?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is Billy. Poetry for me has been almost, it's been a healing tool. It's been sort of like, you know, salvation in a way. You know, I'm probably sounding very facetious, but it's sanity. You know, when you can't say something out loud, you can always write it down. It's been something that has clarified thought for me and everything. It's been, you know, I think next to God and my family, poetry is probably the most important thing to me in my life and everything. It's been a tool, you know, to demonstrate my humanness too.
I like that. Anyone else? What is it? What is this thing that we do? What is it?
Well, I will tell you, for me, this is Diane. For me, it is really my air. It is a place that I can go to for comfort, and as Billy said, for healing. It has been my one sacred space to fall flat on my face, to also stand up in my words. It is my best friend. I go to this place very, very often, and it is the one place that I am most vulnerable. That's what poetry is to me.
All right. Anyone else, as we continue this journey? I'm liking what I'm hearing. Anyone else?
Yeah, this is Liz. I love the question, and I think I relate a lot to what Diane was saying and Billy, and I would add to that that it's also a conversation with both previous and future generations. And it's a way that, it's a way, like, for me, I can glimpse into the souls of people in the past and maybe even contribute to some people in the future who I will never meet.
Mm. Beautifully stated. Mm-hmm. I'd like now to introduce you, Liz, as well as Miss Cayenne.
Am I going or Miss Cayenne?
Liz.
I think you're going, Liz.
Okay, great. I am reading a poem from the book from our section called The Color of Pain. From the section of Blending Colors, this poem is called The Color of Pain. Reflection is a loud bang. As yellow clouds morph into the wind with a nod toward Saturn's pink rings. The day gives no reprieve to the purple-black bruise over her left eye where his fist landed last night. The color of silence is the smell of shame coiled tightly in her throat as she chokes on the putrid scream spreading through her veins, dripping red from the split skin where his knife left its mark and his intentions left nothing uncertain. Fear is the sight of her loved ones trapped by the brown-green quicksand of someone else's rage. The color of death is the sparkle of diamonds dancing on her finger, locking her to her silence as loud as the gunshot that covers the blue sky over her grave. Thank you.
Thank you, Liz. I appreciate always hearing that particular piece, sombering, but it's well put together. I am going to read a piece. It's very short, but I'm specifically choosing this piece. It is from the section of the book, The Right Blend. It's the section Blending Diversity, and it's called Facing East. I am particularly fond of this for this occasion because, Dr. Ingram, this was one of the poems that came out of one of the writing prompts in the meetup group that we both participated in, whereby the prompt was to literally sit into space and to face a particular direction. I'm very directionally challenged, so they had to tell me which way was east, but face the direction that we thought was east. and then literally let the direction speak to you. So here's a piece called Facing East. East Coast, a modern-day land of milk and honey, small, narrow streets driven on by gaudy gas guzzlers, but they're shiny, so tiny apartments house big dreams. Huge price tags are met with working poor salaries. Fast-paced trajectories turn pupils into dollar signs. Once-in-a-lifetime opportunities are sometimes purchased with the things that really matter. Thank you.
Thank you. You should see the smile on my face. That's the only bad thing about being on the radio, on the telephone, is that you can't see the smile on a person's face. I am smiling. That's incredible. Liz, this is a question for you, all right, and then others can chime in as well. What was an early experience where you learned that poetic language had power?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Well, let's see. I think I was quite young when I was first introduced to Emily Dickinson, and I would go around and just recite some of her poems and realizing how much I connected to her poetry. And then in addition to that, the ways that the people who I recited it to connected to it, that really left an impression with very young me. So, I think, you know, you're asking for a really early experience, and wow,
yes.
I mean, what a great question, and I really had to think about that, and I think that that's
right.
That's an early example of that. Thanks for bringing that
all
memory
right.
up for me.
Well, I think I'd like everyone to answer that question. What was an early experience that made you say, wow, poetry, this is it?
Well, this is Billy.
Anyone can start.
This is Billy. My earliest experience probably was 10th grade, and when we read Edna St. Vincent Millay and her poem that I fell in love with called Renaissance, and it went, all I could see from where I stood was three long mountains and a wood. I saw three islands in a day, and I can't remember the rest of it now, but I mean, it was like Liz, something just clicked, and I guess that put together with my upbringing in the church and, the call response for things we listened to, you know, since we were 5 years old and everything. I mean, things just clicked in my head. And I started writing when I was like 17 years old. I've been writing poetry ever since. But it was Millay.
All right.
Just her.
Edna St. Vincent Millay.
And
all right.
Yeah. Edna St. Right, Vincent Millay.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Who's next? Who'd like to share?
I would like
early
to
experience.
Yes. I would like to share. You know, when I heard the first time I heard Sojourner Truth, Ain't I a Woman, something went all over me. You have to, I don't know that I've talked about my background, which I have not, but I'm from Georgia. And so there are a lot of boycotts. There are a lot of stuff going on in Georgia when I was in the 70s. And I was very much a part of some of the marches and some of the boycotts, you know, as a little girl. But when I heard this poem for the first time, it just shook me because even then, you know, in the 1800s, even then you have a woman with courage enough to say that, you know, you're doing this for them. And ain't I a woman? I just love that.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my first
mm-hmm.
wow moment for poetry is Sojourner Truth, Ain't I a Woman.
All right. All right. Clifford, what about you, sir?
So I started writing when I was young. My family moved overseas and I didn't have any friends. I left my friends behind. And so I began reading books, and I went from young adult books to adult books very quickly. And I don't remember reading poetry, but I remember writing in my bed at night, and it came out as poetry. And I don't know why it did. It just did. And that, I guess, was the most powerful way for me to express myself in words. And that was the experience of poetry for me. And I never stopped from that point on.
All right, very nice. Very nice.
It's been a way. It's been a way for me to figure out the world, and that's a lifelong journey.
Yes, I can understand that. Hiram, what about you, my friend?
I think when I was young, the base having the opportunity to crack open James Weldon Johnson's God's Trombones was just a choir in a book for me. It was the notion that you could do with words, you could lift up, literally lift up eyes, lift up hearts, lift up spirit with words. This was amazing to me. And so I look back to that book, look to other poets as well, but that book certainly had an impact on me. Thank you for that wonderful question.
Yes, and Miss Cayenne.
it's interesting because as I'm thinking about this question, I have so many places I can specifically point to. But your question was the earliest, and according to my mother, it was 3 years of age. She transcribed something that I said that was very poetic. And in her words, my first poem was at the age of three. My first recollection of a poem that I wrote and was connected to poetry and writing in that way was second grade. And I think my mother ultimately, no matter how I flip the different times where I recognized poetry being very connected to me or connected to it, my mother was the igniter and the initiator. She had a way with words. She introduced me to words. I read the dictionary and was just fascinated with words and how to use them in sentences. And I was bullied as a kid, and I couldn't fight for a while. I learned to fight eventually, but I couldn't fight for a while. But I had my words. And if you spoke to me and I wanted to come back, I would come back with words, and you wouldn't even know that you just got an uppercut with words. And so I've always, that was my ability to fight. I wasn't a physical fighter, but I had words.
All right, all right. Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back. I believe. Are you open to that?
Most yeah. definitely, of course.
Okay, okay. Let's see if this works. All right. Area code 240, the first three numbers are 353. You're on the air with the Right Blend.
Hello there, it's Lady Di.
Hello.
Hi, Lady Di.
How are you? I'm glad you can hear me. This is exciting. I don't have a question in particular, but I just want to say that hearing each of you speak, you already know that I have an extra special closeness to each poet that's on the line, including the host. So I just want to sit back and just listen to you all some more. And it's just a delight for my evening. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for calling in. I greatly appreciate it. All right. Let's see. Okay. Area code 571-288. You're on the air with the Right Blend. Have a question.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to say hi to Miss Cayenne, how are you? I love you. And I also wanted to say hi to the host. Michael, this is Anastasia. You should be
good. Hello, Anastasia. How are you?
Hi, Anastasia.
I'm fine. Hi.
Great.
Good to hear
good your voice. All right.
It's good to hear you.
Thank you.
It was really nice. I'm going to continue listening, okay?
All right.
Thank you, Anastasia.
Appreciate the call. All right. And there's one more here. Area code 610, the first three numbers are 207. You're on the air with the Right Blend.
Hello, Dr. Ingram. I want to thank you for calling the Right Blend to come and be on your show. This is wonderful to hear them. They are an amazing group of poets, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much. All right. I'd like to turn the program back over to Clifford and to Diane.
Thank you, Michael. I should have said my first poem was from the section of the book called Blending Voices. My next poem will be from the section of the book called Blending Diversity, and it's called Sketches of Spain. Miles said, Concerto de Aranjuez, couldn't get it out of my mind. The cool, the castanets, the moriscos, cutting at Monroe's, pimping in Detroit, composing with Gil, gypsies in the modal dance, Castilians killing the night, like one big guitar, one fierce palmer, penny whistle of the pig castrator, jaleo of smack and blow, saitas, soleas, cante hondo and duende, the arrow of song. In the heart pierced by grief, Miles said, through longings and laments, loneliness hid in the hard bop of blues, bitterness scored in the shadow. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cliff. That was beautiful. I'm going to say thank you again to Dr. Ingram for being an endorser on the book. We absolutely appreciate your endorsement of the book. So you've been with us in that process of getting this book up and available, which is, it is available on, you know, Amazon and so. But I just want to also say that we're all appreciative of this moment, and we just want to thank you for allowing us to be here. Now, I'm going to read a poem, and the poem that I read earlier was from Blending Uniqueness. But this poem is a poem that I wrote. It really is in remembrance of my mother, and this is not in the book. So, and I'm not going to read all of it because it's long, but it is entitled, She Comes as a Sunset. She comes in the eve as a sunset, with the last sun slipping down her shoulders. My skin gathers for church now and waits for her ghost to arrive. Echoed chimes bloom from the distance as she steps in slowly, wearing the red evening as her gown. I press into warm air with an ear pinched to its skin. I can barely hear her just above the silence in my writing room. We exchange voices. The cursor moves without touch, without argument. So much of me shines when I feel her presence. Doesn't every adult orphan want the chance to be parented again? In our background, a church plays our favorite hymns. We worship everything in this moment, the air, the ache of loss, the bright red bird that flies into my window, the God we belong to, the bloodless fever of loneliness, the rebirth of our souls. They are different now, aren't they? The small climb, holy of smells, holy of home, slowly droops above an isolated wind that waits and come back stronger and more spiritual than before. Even now, I feel a Holy Ghost dance excitedly moving in me like an eight-year-old. No one knows that she is here with me, holding me up. I wallow so deep into her soul that I become lost. Each breath sacred, each time that we write and suppose zoetic, the air becomes cold, the cursor stops moving, the chimes from next door rings louder, the wind ungathers my skin, closes its door, and my voice becomes colorless. Thank you.
Extremely powerful.
Yeah, powerful.
Extremely, extremely powerful. Yeah. You know, one of the things that I picked up from reading the book as well as that particular piece as well is that there's so much emotion that's involved, so much emotion. Here's my question, and all of you can answer. Do you think someone can be a poet if they don't feel strong emotions?
Oh,
They can be a bland poet. I think.
Okay.
I think the ability to feel life. I think the ability to feel life in its rawness is what makes you a poet. I mean, you cannot. I mean, I've been told that, you know, if you silence one emotion, you silence them all. So, anger. You can't silence anger because then you'll silence joy and you'll silence, you know, everything else. And so, I think you have to kind of let your emotions speak to you. You can't silence them and write, because I think poetry is a thing of the soul.
All right. Very nice. Anyone else? Can you be a poet if you don't feel strong emotions?
Well, I think the word for me, anyway, the words come out of feeling. They come out of an emotional place, and they sort of filter through the brain, and attempt to make sense. But I think the impulse to write poetry is an emotional one.
Other thoughts?
I agree with both Billy and Cliff. I think it does come from a place of emotion. I think that when we look at, you know, things around us, whether we agree or disagree, they move us in one direction or the other. So I think the capacity to feel and to express is really what poetry is all about. It's a bridge, it's a voice, it's making certain that what you see and observe, and it's like a timestamp. You're going to draw some emotion from, you know, even if we look at what's happening right now in the world,
yes,
you're going to have some kind of emotional expression.
All right, very nice. I'd like to introduce Billy O'Kara and Hiram LaRue.
Hey, this is Billy. I'm going to read a poem not in the book, and one could say I'm still working on, but it's called Never Leave a Child Unattended. Never leave a child unattended. Don't laugh at them when they tell you, I am afraid to die. Never crying with them when they try to show you visible bruises or those hidden from your apathy. Never let a child see your degradation. Tell them they did not see what they know they saw. It is a blow to their innocence when you ask, why did you scream when the foul smell of Mr. Joe's barbecue chicken all about, never covering semen smells and sweat. Let them keep their saying and name for them as you must all Holocaust, not tossing them aside, hiding under Kool's and Jack Daniels. Let them dream. Let them have a dream more than a maybe so, but I know you can manage the stations of their birth, of their slumber, and scream hallelujahs when they fail and pick themselves up from falling. Numbering all of their victories, tell them, tall them above their own expectations, talk to them, single them out with talk, not asking for meekness and quietness, for they are too quiet anyway. She has no voice anyway, having been silenced by grandmas and grandpas, knowing only to say yes, ma'am, and sir, never that needed no inside of them. They were told they couldn't use anyway. Then play with them, ignoring the root rot growing in their souls and that knocking at the door of their mind, taking their light away before they'll attest, I am here, trying to find rest in the arms supposed to love them, closed upon entry, when winded with worry, because their sky is falling. Never leave a child unattended.
Wow.
You know, Dr. Ingram, you asked here a while back what are some of the difficulties in working together as a group. Well, one difficulty is following poets like Billy O'Kara and her amazing poetry.
Thank you, Harry.
Yeah, Billy's good. Billy's good.
Billy's amazing. So this poem is not in the book. It was published in a little journal called Brave New World, and it's going to be included in my next collection, which is at the publisher's. It's a part of a series of poems that I kind of informally call my gratitude poems, Where You Are. This crumbly cake of hope, this held up high tray of joy, this down deep sparkled flute, this alleluia, this opened fizz in waiting, this broom upkick and view, the wonders, yes, this ever elfin jiggle dance, this zinnia burst and brightly led, this ribbony glory, this harking gurgle, this wiggle, hopping, muddy lope. Thanks, Dr. Ingram.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, Howie.
Oh, very nice, very nice. I'd like to know now about the sections in the book. They're blending colors, rhythms, memories, diversity, uniqueness, voices, and blending together. Tell me, how was that constructed?
Wow.
Diane?
Diane?
Diane, you are the founder.
You all are too funny, okay? I just, you know, I think what was happening is we were coming up with different themes. And coming up with those themes, we began to kind of look at this, taking the word blend, and coming up with all the different things that we came up. And the one that comes to mind is blending colors, which is the first section of the book. And once we started with that process, we had to first say, do you want to say blend or, you know. So we had to kind of agree that each section would be named and forementioned with the blending, because it really does speak to who we are. So we wanted to make sure that carried throughout the book. And while I have the floor for just a moment, I definitely want to thank all of the endorsers, and definitely want to say something about Farcine Bynum. Farcine Bynum was also poet of distinction in Prince George's County, who with Hiram LaRue had a poetry connection. She started this process in Hiram with that diversity theme. So I just want to make sure that folks know that when they purchase the book, that Farcine Bynum, her poem is at the front of the book, and she's spotlighted in the book because of all of her work in you know, the area of diversity. But I gave you a long answer, but yes.
All right. Very nice. Liz Reitzig and Ms. Cayenne, you're up next.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to add a little bit also to both the challenge question that you asked early on and to what Diane was just talking about. And one of the answers to what's one of the biggest challenges, and in the best possible way, kind of like doing a really wonderful puzzle, is that we've actually taken certain poems from the book that we worked on, each section, and then one of our members would combine it into a collaborative piece. And they've turned out, I mean, it was, for those who were putting that together, it was a challenge, but they've turned out so incredibly beautiful. And I think that adds a depth and a richness to the blend word in our title and our group name.
All right, very nice.
So be sure to ask about that sometime too. We have quite a couple of lovely pieces there. So my next poem is not in the book. It is a poem called Wonder, very short piece. When if there were no wonder, with plight of soon arrive, see past as screens confuse the show of if in wonder be. it is not so that can be taught, or rather left undone, alone, beyond, for whether be, as if, in wonder, gone.
Wow.
I feel like a philosopher.
Yeah, it sounds, awesome. Sounds like your favorite Dickinson, though.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you, Liz. I am going to read a piece called Grass Don't Grow in the Ghetto. It is actually in our collection in the section called Blending Together. It is also published in a chapbook of mine called Syncopated Heart. And it's funny, this was written several years ago, actually, in response to George Brown. I think it was Michael Brown. And then I'm reading it, and I'm like, wow, things remain still relevant. So grass don't grow in the ghetto. Glass glistens where grass is supposed to grow. Gruesome grooves pierce the ground, jutting upward like black fists punching stale air. Sharp-petaled flowers memorialize dreams, wishes, and whispers of hope. And for the life of me, I can't figure out why grass don't grow in the ghetto. Gaping, glop gashes set his face aglow in the afterglow of a grappling with the popo. Gory glimpses of his faded glory is merely a glimmer in his glittering eyes. Groping for the remnants of his vitality, it slips through his fingers. His mother curses the fingers that pulled the trigger. They shot my son. Mowed down like blades of green grass growing towards a glaring sun. My son! His spirit pierces white clouds thrust upward like a black fist punching stale air. Still can't figure out why grass don't grow in the ghetto. His homies pour libations, one sip for you, 10 gulps for me. Believing that the blood-stained tree roots next to the yellow tape and the white chalk silhouette would somehow serve as his esophagus, delivering liquid resurrection power. But before he could rise from the dead, his homies would wash away urban poetry with hot pits and hot piss, leaving nothing behind but shattered liquor bottles and the stench of dreams deferred. Still wondering why grass don't grow in the ghetto. A sprinkler system spews putrid defeat. We fertilize our seeds with maggot-filled cow chips and avaricious dung, aka some real stinky shit. We eat our young and throw up our old, killing our future while immortalizing our past. We infuse hate when the hater is the hunter and the little black boy is the bait. Grass can't grow in the ghetto as long as grass stays greener on the other side. As long as the economical, medical, and educational divides are wider than the span between our eyes, glass will continue to glisten where grass is supposed to grow. Until our so-called social services becomes true human services. Until our equality is no longer a no-go, but something that we do know going forward. Until our narcissistic greed ceases to be our ladder. And the lives of little black boys and little black girls, they really do matter. In the meantime, we'll politic and pontificate and perseverate the problems that plague the brown people, ignoring the glass that glistens where grass is supposed to grow, acting like we just can't figure out why grass don't grow in the ghetto. Thank you.
You know, that's a perfect segue into my question, and this is for all of you. What is the role of a poet in modern-day society? And anyone can start.
This is Billy. The role of a poet is to tell the truth. I mean, for me personally, as I listen to poets and everything, I think I get very bored and upset when there just seems to be a rant and a rave about what really doesn't matter. I think if we're, especially I'm probably the oldest one. I am the oldest one in the group. You know, I just became a great-grandmother about a week ago.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. I just believe that we owe the next generation. I mean, Liz talked about the next generation and the generations to come. We owe them the truth about life and how, you know, how we saw, the eyes we saw life through. We, you know, they don't need fairy tales. They need to see reality. And I think that the poet is responsible for bringing that reality to the forefront. And that's my take on it.
All right. Very nice.
This is Miss Cayenne. I think there's several roles of the poet, and in this last piece that I read, I think one of the roles is to shed light, to expose, to decry and declare, to fight, right? To fight inequities and injustices, to do so in our lanes, boldly, and hopefully effectively. I think we all have a, whatever our area, whatever our passion, whatever, I think we have the ability to impact change. And I think the role of the poet is to do so with words that pierce, that words that shed light, that reveal, and ideally change.
All right. Someone else, please. What's the role of a poet? What role should we play?
Cliff here. I think I agree with everything that's been said. But I also would add that I think the role of a poet is to bring beauty into the world. That there is so much that needs to change, and there is so much ugliness. Part of the gift of a poet is to be able to see beauty in all of that and around that, and to bring it to life. So
right, very nice.
I would just add to the mix.
Okay. Liz, Diane, Hiram, the role of a poet in modern day society.
Yeah, this is Liz speaking. I love everything that my fellow poets have said there. And I would add to that also, and it's hard to articulate really, but to allow oneself to become closer to God, and however that individual defines that, and then maybe allow that the reader to come closer to themselves, and also to come closer to whatever spiritual truth that they live by.
I like that. Hiram, how about you, sir?
My sense is that poets play multiple roles, but one theme that kind of threads all of them together, or threads through many of them, is the poet typically tries to haunt. And I mean by that, when somebody reads a poem or hears a poem, hopefully they leave with some questions that have been answered, some questions that have not been answered, social awareness that perhaps they were unaware of, some beauty that has been revealed that had never been apparent to the reader or the listener. So it's kind of the poet haunts through her or his words and leaves the reader wanting more. Thank you.
Yes. And Diane, bring us home.
Well, I think that certainly poetry paints a picture, and it does so very emotionally with some experience that we have tread through so that we can share with others. I think it is also a bridge. I, like Cliff, believe that there's a lot of beauty. I think there's light. I think, like Hiram and Liz and Ms. Cayenne and has said, that these are moments where we can capture and hope to have folks have some introspection, some self-examination, to take something with them, to know that we're bleeding from the soul onto the page, so that what we say and how we say it has some depth of influence to even just, it's almost like a seed, just to think about what has been said, maybe for change, maybe for growth, maybe for introspection, but certainly I think when people bleed on paper, it is for a reason, and I, you know, we hope that we leave something with the reader or with the audience.
I could keep all of you all night long, but I can't do that. And I want to continue this dialogue, this discussion. I want to continue to hear the beautiful words, the powerful words, your thoughts. I'm just so impressed. The book, The Right Blend, is available on Amazon.com as well as Walmart.com. I think everyone should purchase it. It is a must-read. It does signify what's happening in this nation today. We all need to come together in some way, shape, or form. So I want to thank all of you. And I'd like, Cliff, if you don't mind, I'd like you to play us out, if you don't mind, if that's okay.
Love
you feel
it.
Comfortable with that? All right.
Sure. Thank you. Thank
you. All right. Very nice, everyone. Thanks again, and have a wonderful evening. And as I share every program, let poetry ring. Good night, everyone. Thank you so much. You're welcome back anytime. All right, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
You have just listened to the Quintessential Listening Poetry Online Radio Podcast with your host, Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher. And make sure to catch our next episode.